In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Brian Shackman in the dungeons, if you will, if you're watching on video. And John Senecal, episode 247. Obviously, well, first of all, John, how's it going?
Not bad, Brian. I spent the weekend in Georgia. It was interesting. We went to a big reunion for a soldier that came back from California to be at the 50th family reunion. It was great. It was really fun.
How was the stadium? You went to the Braves, right?
Oh, yeah. I went to the Braves game Friday night. It was interesting. The Braves destroyed the Rangers. So they scored 15 runs. It was 15-1 or 15-2. So I got to see a lot of home runs. I got to see a lot of runs scored, obviously. And I got to see a pitcher pitch. That's the first time I've ever seen a pitcher pitch. And it was a former Yankee, Kyle Higashioka, pitched for the Texas
pitch?
Rangers.
A catcher pitch.
A position player pitch. Yeah. Sorry, position player pitch. So, yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen that. And I watched a lot of baseball, so that was interesting. What's interesting about Truist Park is it's kind of like Foxborough, right? They built this stadium out away from the city, and they just built a bunch of stuff around it. So they want you to go out there and hang out all day, and you can stay there in a hotel, and you can do all these, cool entertainment kind of things. But it's nowhere near the city, really. So it's not like you're going to be going downtown and hanging out afterwards.
Is there any public transit?
Traveling to. Yeah, there's public transportation to and from, but not like it would, you would see it like a Fenway Park or not. So yeah. It's an interesting dynamic, but the place was sold out. It was a Friday night. It was fireworks night. So obviously that draws some attention, but, and the Braves are good too. The team is in first place. So I would expect it to be sold
interesting.
Out.
I mean, it's fun to go to new parks. It's just fun to try them. I haven't done it in a long time, but you just see the nuances of a different place, or even like I get obsessed on concessions, like what's different for beer and for food and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I always send the pictures when I go to different parks, and I know you do too. But I sent the pictures about the beer, and it was what the small one was like $4.99 or something, and I didn't get one, but I imagine it was probably like 8 ounces or something. It was a small domestic draft.
And they did this thing. I've talked about the value beer. I don't know which stadiums do it, but they'll do like Busch Light or Miller High Life for $5. Obviously, you don't drink, but I mean,
they probably sell a lot of it, Brian.
That's appealing. That's appealing to me. Let's get into the teams here because we're going to be rapid fire. We're going to do team updates. We'll give a few thoughts on the World Cup. Obviously, entering Monday's games, the Red Sox have won 13 in a row. They're playing a Baltimore team that's actually pretty hot themselves. They've won 7. It's hard for me. It's sort of like eating raw onions and then having a really good meal, which is my breath is still really bad from the onions, although what I'm tasting now tastes good. And by that, I mean it's hard to forget how freaking bad the Red Sox were, but it's pretty stunning. And we tuned in as we watched a bunch of the games, and we tuned to that comeback game. I don't know if it was the second game on Friday. I can't remember, or Saturday's game, but even when they still don't hit, they're finding a way to win. There was a sense all weekend, like they fell behind 1-0 yesterday on Sunday, and that they were going to be fine. Like it's just this weird transformation, and I don't know. And we'll get into this because the trade deadline is obviously all we're thinking about now with this. But I don't know what they're going to do. But it's fun to see guys who you really think either were terrible or had very little expectations actually putting it all together. And, I mean, I know the AL stinks, but the fact that they've won 18 of 20 and won from the second worst record in baseball to actually in a playoff spot in less than a month is pretty stunning.
Yeah, baseball can turn on a dime, right? And Red Sox fashion, it's more than just overnight, right? It's 4 straight sweeps too, Brian. That's pretty impressive, right? This kind of, when you look at it, it really pretty much all turned around when they swept the Yankees, right? That's when the momentum really started. I think they lost one game after that, right after that, and then they went on another winning streak. So it's it's definitely impressive. We talked about it last episode that they're playing just free. They're playing free baseball, and they got energy, Brian. They got that stupid Wally helmet back. And it's just they're playing a different form of baseball, the exact opposite of what you see the Yankees do and a lot of other teams do around Major League Baseball. And when you play like that, it's contagious. It's contagious. And we talked about, will the fans be there when the World Cup dies out and everyone disappears, you know, from the FIFA excitement and the Sail Boston stuff? I would say yes, especially right now, because they're going to go out there and they want to be part of history, right? Because they have two more games. If they win, they'll break their record. Right? They're not home, are they? And they're on the road.
They are home. Yep.
All right, so there you go. They got two shots, right? They're going to be home for at least three games, right? So they could break or tie the franchise and break the franchise wins record. So you're going to pack the stadium coming up.
So as
and they're
we
an exciting
the
team to watch.
We try to move these conversations forward and not just give our sentiment, but, you know, try to bring up topics that maybe aren't front and center. One I'll put to you, would you give Chad Tracy, would you take the interim tag off and give him like 1 or 2 years or something?
I mean, I don't really think that's the thing to do right now for the Red Sox. I think what you need to do is you just need to concentrate on what's going on with the team. Don't mess with it. Don't mess with it. Think about what's coming the next 3 weeks of the trading deadline or 2 weeks. Don't start throwing tags on people and labeling people. Let the team just do what they do. I don't think it's any time to be meddling with anything.
So it's interesting you say there's no time to be meddling with it, because that's exactly what the trade deadline does, is it meddles with the team. You might lose a guy,
but that's what I said, though, Brian. I said, as you look towards the trade deadline the next 2 weeks, thinking what you need for your team. Well, I don't think you need to be talking about your manager and all that. I really don't. There's been too much manager controversy.
But don't ruin a segue for me. I mean, because it's the segue into that, because to me, it's not just about the trade deadline. It's, I don't know if Garrett Crochet's coming back and when. I don't know if Roman Anthony's coming back and when. I don't know if Trevor Story's coming back and when. But those are three guys, if you traded for, you'd be like, whoa, 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 whoa. But at the same time, this chemistry is sort of what's making them do well. So I'm worried on both ends of the spectrum. Right, I'm worried about giving away too much and getting something that'll disrupt it, and I'm worried about these guys coming back and disrupting it. So they're not a World Series caliber team in almost anybody's eyes. So I just feel weird about the possible additions.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to make additions if you're going to win, just like the Yankees are going to have to do it if you're going to win. That's just how it works. You have to. And the way the team is playing, the management and the ownership is forced to do it. They're going to be forced to do it, because that's going to the only way they're going to show the fan base that they actually care about the team, regardless of if they're winning or losing. And they're winning now. And I would expect that the way they're playing over the next, 12 games you got until the trading deadline, that they're going to be in contention. I just don't see them falling apart that much. Like, they would legit have to go into a terrible losing streak over the next 12 games to fall out of playoff contention. And it's just shocking to me, Brian, that they can be doing what they're doing, and not any of the real pieces playing any role. Like you said, Garrett Crochet, Roman Anthony, and I don't think you're getting those two guys back. I think Trevor Story might be the only guy that you're going to see back, and I don't think he even – why would he need to play? He wasn't doing anything when he was there, but you're going to have to play him. So that could throw – that might be the biggest problem the Red Sox have going forward, is what will they do when this guy – because I don't think the two are coming back. I really don't.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 247 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. And then there's the Yankees. Obviously, the big showdown with the Dodgers, and thank goodness the Red Sox swept the Rays, because if the Rays had split, they would be like the Yankees are still very much there.
Yeah, it's amazing that the Yankees gained a game. They're a game and a half out as we speak of East, and they still hold the wild card. But what, you know, everyone says the Yankees are playing terrible, right? Like, they're since Judge went down on May 31st. They're 19-21, so they're two games under 500. So that's really not that bad, considering what they lost and how bad they've been playing. What stands out in people's minds is,
however, can I interrupt? They went on that winning streak in the beginning of the middle. So since that winning streak, they've actually played pretty poorly, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what people are looking at is that 7-game losing streak, which killed them, and then obviously being swept by the Red Sox. But what you got to look deeper into with the Yankees is – the way they're losing games, right? They're not scoring any runs when they lose. Like, they're scoring one run a game, two runs a game. And what is it? What is it from? The long ball, right? 46% of the Yankees' runs this season are all by the home run, right? That needs to change. If you look directly at that, Jazz Chisholm Jr. wins the game Sunday night for the Yankees, right? But what else did he do in that game? He comes up with the bases loaded and one out after a batter. Dominguez just went on like an 8-pitch at bat, and he swings at the first pitch looking to hit the ball out, right? Because it's bases loaded. What does he do? He pops up. And then the next batter, Anthony Volpe, does what he does best, strikes out on a ball off the plate. So the Yankees, they can't score a run, right, with bases loaded. But that's their story right now, and that's what the fans are seeing. And that's the difference that a Judge or a Stanton makes in a lineup. But that Stanton's not coming back. And if you look at it, Brian, Aaron Judge has been out 40 games, right? Basically, right now, he's been out 40 games. And if you think about it, he's probably not coming back if he comes back till September 1st. That's about another 40 games. It's 38 games. Now, if the Yankees are playing like they play now, do you think they're going to be able to hold that wild card spot when they look at the teams that they're facing over the next 38 games? Now, that, I think, what the Yankee fans need to look at. Will this team actually make the playoffs and weather the Aaron Judge storm? Because you might trade for someone at the trading deadline, but that trade has got to be absolutely insanely huge to make up for another month of not having Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I mean,
Aaron Judge is not coming back before September 1st.
Right.
He's not.
I find the Yankees just kind of boring. There's nothing like...
Exactly. Brian, you hit the nail on the head right there. They're so boring to watch. They're absolutely dreadfully boring to watch. I mean, I hate to say it. I would rather watch the Red Sox and their energy than the Yankees. I mean, there's
something about
it. Boring to watch.
And they need some sort of spark. Both teams are fascinating for the trade deadline for the exact reasons we've delineated, because the Yankees...
I think really a lot of it, though, is who are they going to trade on the trade deadline, Brian? Both teams. Who do you have to trade?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like... A couple of big leaguers. I don't know what the minors have to serve up for the Sox, but
not much. They just don't. Both teams.
I feel like I don't know, but I mean, you know, you get. I disagree in one thing you said, though. I think the Yankees, even without Judge, can stay in the as a wild card team. I don't see them,
but without making an addition, without adding a player to compensate for your terrible catcher. At the very least, like if you don't add anybody insignificant, do you think the Yankees can make the playoffs without Aaron Judge?
I would say loosely yes, and then I would say obviously I do think they need to upgrade, but I mean they're not going to be able to give a package strong enough to get Hunter Goodman. I mean, a Yankee trade in the Yankee lore would be to get a guy like that, because then you have your catcher for the next 10 years, and he likes to hit the long ball, but I don't know what they have to get that. And so that's something because I mean,
they're not willing to trade. Let's put it that way. And that's been the Yankees' problem really for the last 3 or 4 years, is they're just not willing to trade any of these players.
Yeah. So the takeaway here for listeners is you think that even though we've always assumed they were going to be there, that if they don't get it right before Judge, the playoffs are in jeopardy, in your opinion?
Yeah, because you're talking like 40 more games, right? You're basically talking another of what we just watched up until now, another of this. And the Yankees are playing just under 500, and they're not playing that good of teams. Every team they got coming up except for Toronto and Baltimore over the next 40 games, it's either in first place in their division, a half a game out of first place, or in a wild card.
Yep. Yep.
Over the next 40 games. And that's some powerhouse baseball you got to run through. And that's with the summer coming on and your pitcher rotation, starting to show somewhere. Hopefully Fried's coming back soon. Rodon, we don't know what he's getting. Schmidt won't be back probably till the end of August either. So it's not like you've got a lot of additions coming back in your pitching. So what's been carrying the Yankees now is the pitching. It might start to wear out as the season progresses. It's the heat and the exhaustion.
George Senecal, Brian Shackman, Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, we tend to touch on other things. Let's talk a little bit of World Cup. I mean, Spain won it. Everyone talked about how boring the final was. I thought the halftime show was stupid. But they outclassed Argentina. I mean, Argentina couldn't even hang on with a stupid ball, so they deserved to win. But I was more inclined. I randomly started watching on Saturday when it was France-England, and it is 6-4. It was one of the most enjoyable games to watch of the whole month or whatever. I mean, my final takeaway is the U.S. team had a horrible ending. The politics of it really bothered me, and the final was boring. But and FIFA is corrupt. They had $9 billion they took in on the backs of 150,000 volunteers and ridiculous ticket prices. All that aside, and all that matters to me, I FIFA sucks. But I really think that, you know, as somebody who is not some MAGA Republican and loves this country, I think it was very important, and I don't know if it's lasting, to see people come from other countries and enjoy us. And it reminded me of how lucky we are, and it also makes me understand that we need to not lose sight of how lucky we are. So I get a little philosophical on the World Cup because people came here and had fun. And I think ultimately, and it was peaceful. And that, those are the two most important things to me.
Yeah, I mean, I did like watching it, Brian. It was interesting to watch. And I just realized I had my microphone off in the corner here, Brian. That's why it didn't sound so good. I was distracted this morning trying to get everything ready.
It wasn't my fault. By the way, yeah. I want the whole world to know the TV guy who knows how to do everything. I was like, you sound a little hollow, John. He's like, I think it's you. Your connection stinks. You're in the basement.
Well, the problem is your connection keeps cutting out. That's the problem. I can't keep seeing you. You're getting all ratty and things. So, yeah, look, he just froze again. Oh, man, it's always something, man. It's a technical difficulty. It's always something. But it's like the World Cup, man. It was always something. Those guys are flopping every 2 seconds. That game was so boring to watch. It was awful. I think the highlight of that game was that dude that did the Buffalo flip.
That was unbelievable. Got the
and the way that they can sell the fact that they're so-called injured, like we're watching that dude flipped in the air, and it was actually like a pretty bad tumble. Yeah. And at one point, it looked like they were going to cart him off in a stretcher. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and they're playing. Like 10 seconds later, I'm like, what is going on here? Yeah. Like, what is going on?
It is one of the lamest things. But even like when the U.S. played Belgium, it was pretty unbelievable because Belgium would do all these little things to frustrate the U.S. They'd be like, oh, here's your ball for a kick. Oh, I'll just drop it over there. Or, you know, like they do all these stupid things to make you mad, and so much of it is against the traditional American sporting culture. You know what I mean? Like we fight through checks. We don't go down, you know, and it's interesting when the ball is on the line and they get pulled a little bit, they don't flop when they know they need to make a play. And you can see the moments where in another situation they would go down, and in that one they don't. And so I do hate that part of the culture, but man, it is stunning to watch how they actually kind of believe it in the moment. I don't know. It's kind of funny how they interact with each other when they're doing this stuff.
What I'm amazed by is how much they actually argue with the refs. It's insane how much they get in the face of the ref and like literally like scream at him and tell him you're wrong and like you're an idiot and all this stuff. And they're waving their fingers and flapping their it's pretty amazing how, I guess it's almost like entitlement in a way, because no one's ever wrong, right? There's no one ever wrong.
I think that actually the word entitlement is perfect. All these guys are freaking divas, and the performative element of it is crazy. But I will say from an athletic perspective, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you ever played soccer, I mean, I know you watched as a dad, I would pitch in and, you know, do a little back in the day when I wasn't so worried about popping an Achilles. I would jump in and like even simple things of like in a slow game, just seeing where to pass or one touches. That's all that shit is so hard. It's and that's why Spain, like if you watch enough soccer, was it boring? Yeah. But their ability to know where each other is at every moment is insane, how well they played together as a team. But I think just generally, I think that FIFA's corrupt, but the tournament is the best. I actually enjoyed it more than a lot of the Olympics.
Yeah, I think it's great to watch. It's great in general, you know, and it was good for the U.S. It was good for the cities. It was great for Boston. It was cool to see that. But yeah, FIFA is insanely corrupt and way too much theatrics in soccer, dude, just way too much. But it is insanely physically demanding. So those guys are insanely great athletes. No joke, no doubt about that.
Totally. All right, John, listen, we'll see how the week goes. Next week, maybe the Sox will be back in last, and who knows? But it's certainly nice to have some meaningful games here for Boston when you know, a month ago, I literally wouldn't even turn it on. So have a great week, John.
And I'll try to find my microphone next time, Brian, as instead of leaving it on the ground like I did, like an idiot. See, I was doing everything and I was getting how muffled it is now, Brian.
Yeah, I did. I was aware. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. You've been listening to episode 247 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.